Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. We've got a great show today. In a few minutes, I'll be interviewing Parker Palmer, who was just named by Utney Reader one of their visionaries for 2011, 25 people who are changing the world. And I would wholeheartedly agree that he belongs on that list. For many years now, his humane way of being and thinking has impacted my life in a significant way, and I can hardly wait for you to meet him. But before we begin the interview, we open with a few words about last week's show, our segment on A World of Good, and a commentary about politics and the human spirit, the subject of our upcoming interview. Last week on the interview with Alison Shapiro, we mentioned that she was happily married when she had two brainstem strokes. Then later in the interview, she mentioned that she got married again. What we didn't share was that in the midst of her recovery, her beloved and adoring husband died, which only makes her already remarkable recovery story more remarkable. We only have so much time in an interview, and there were many things in her book, Healing into Possibility, I had to omit. If you liked what you learned in the interview with Alison Bonds Shapiro, there's a lot more of it in the book. And the things that helped her to heal apply to other medical issues, not just stroke. So you can go to her website, healingintopossibility.com, to learn more. And if you did not hear the interview and would like to, archives of our shows are available on the voiceamerica.com website. Look for the Bread for the Journey radio on the Variety Channel. My World of Good story today is short. I recently learned that in India, it is common to celebrate special days by giving something away. So, for example, on one's birthday, the birthday gal or guy give gifts to others. They might still receive gifts, but the impulse is to celebrate by giving. I want to begin such a tradition in my life, and I wonder if there's anyone out there who might like to join me. Write to me at bfjradio@gmail.com. Let's amp up the birthday bash with small acts of kindness. I bet you'll be reporting the best birthdays ever. Come join me. Before we bring on our guest for today, Parker Palmer, author of Healing the Heart of Democracy, I'd like to talk a little bit about my own history with politics, because I think my story is the story of many others. I remember in my 20s, meeting Europeans my age. They were much more informed about national and international politics. I saw the contrast, but I had no interest in politics. I did what I thought was my part, and I voted in all the local presidential and midterm elections, but most of the time, the people running for office were not people I felt like I trusted. They spoke in predictable cliches, and with the exception of the straight-talking Jimmy Carter and a few local officials, I always seem to be choosing the best person from a group I didn't much like. Politics for me was limited to voting and was treated kind of as a necessary evil, you might say. I had to do it. Then the debacle happened with the 2000 election, and I realized I had to become more involved in national politics. The attacks of 9/11 pointed me toward international politics, especially issues in the Middle East. And suddenly, President George Bush wanted to begin a war in Iraq, a place that had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks. The polls taken before we went to war there, 40 to 53% of Americans opposed it, and yet only one person in the House of Representatives voted against it, the courageous Barbara Lee from Oakland. How could that be, I wondered? How could so many fine, educated people we voted to represent us be so out of touch with the heart and soul of 50% of the people? And then our young men and women began to die, and others came home disabled physically and mentally, not to mention the innocent people in Iraq getting killed and maimed in the crossfire. I was heartbroken. We were at war. My response was to double down and educate myself more, to sign more petitions that arrived in my email box. And finally, cautiously, I entered into political discussions I had formerly shied away from. There was little I felt I could do, yet I was finding my voice. Parker talks about the politics of the brokenhearted, and it was my broken heart that brought me to this point. And concurrent to all of this, I was running the nonprofit Bread for the Journey, coming at a way to empower we the people in a completely different manner, but until now, not seeing it as anything political. At Bread for the Journey, the nonprofit Bread for the Journey, we lift up ordinary people who have a great idea for how to help others in their community, and we give them a little encouragement and money in a relationship-centered manner. We meet our grantees over a cup of coffee or a meal. We invite them to tell us about their service project, and if the fit is right, we give them a grant to bring it to fruition. No paperwork, no bureaucracy, no red tape. They're micro-grants, small amounts of money, but often a small amount is all that's needed to make their dream a reality. We help elders and children, the hungry, the homeless. We give grants for small initiatives that help the environment, encourage local food production, and get people growing things again. We give to the arts and education. We help people with disabilities and a lot more. After reading Parker's book and slowly coming to understand a new definition of politics, a new definition to me, I'm seeing how political Bread for the Journey really is. So I'm looking forward to talking to Parker about that and thinking together about all the ways you and I can fulfill the dream of a democracy of the people, by the people, and for the people. So with this, I'd like to introduce our guest, Dr. Parker Palmer. Parker is founder and senior partner of one of the most effective life-affirming programs in the country called the Center for Courage and Renewal. You should look them up online. They provide life-altering programs for people in the serving professions such as education, medicine, ministry, law, philanthropy, and nonprofit leadership, as well as people in other walks of life. He's published a dozen poems, some 200 essays, and 7 books. He's one of my favorite authors. As I said earlier in the broadcast, Utney Reader has just named him one of their visionaries for 2011. We'll be talking today about his most recent book, Healing the Heart of Democracy, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. Welcome, Parker. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Marianna. It's wonderful to be with you again in this way.
Thanks. Let's just jump right in. Let's first talk about what I'm calling a new definition of politics. You know, when I hear even our president use the word politics, he'll say something like, we all need to come together to help the American people. And what's happening is that the other side is playing politics. And so that and lots of other examples, I think of politics as gamesmanship, what people do to win an election. I think of politics as something that happens among elected officials. But when I read in your book the beginning of a sentence that said, quote, "When we forget that politics is about weaving a fabric of compassion and justice on which everyone can depend, ... I had to stop and reread it. I thought, surely he meant to write, "When we forget that democracy is about weaving a fabric of compassion and justice on which everyone can depend." But of course, you know exactly what you're writing. Can you talk a little bit about this new to me definition of politics?
Well, thanks for a great question. And I have to confess that I don't always know exactly what I'm writing, because sometimes I have to stop and figure it out once I've gotten it down on the page. But in this case, I think politics, as you said, is not a game of any sort. It's frequently treated in our country and other countries as a blood sport, but it really is about the polis, the people, the civic community. It's about how we use power to create a community in which the weak as well as the strong can flourish, in which love and power can collaborate, and justice and mercy can have their day. Now, some people may say that's an idealistic definition of politics, and find themselves very cynical about it. The problem with cynicism is, first of all, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you decide to be cynical about political engagement because it's a blood sport and you don't want anything to do with it, then you're simply going to bail out of the political process, or you're going to become one of the gladiators in the arena trying to damage the opponent as much as possible. And none of that, of course, lends itself to the kind of democratic politics that we all want. The very idea of democracy, a democracy in our case that is set within the context of a republic, so it's not a direct representational democracy, but the very idea of a democracy is not that the people in Washington, D.C. get to take the ball and run with it. It is rather that we, the people, come together in local gatherings, keep weaving and reweaving the fabric of a civil society that allows us to explore the common good, and gain enough strength or power in our rough consensus that we can make a claim on the people in Washington. A lot of that has broken down, and my book is about how we might reclaim what I call the pre-political life, or the infrastructure of democracy, in order to reach that kind of consensus and make that kind of claim on the people that we send to the nation's capital and the state capitals.
I guess I have to, you know, admit that I have felt powerless as just a human being, not knowing what to do. I feel like my small contribution, what could I do that would make a difference? And when I read your book, I became so enlivened by the possibilities of reaching out to people in my community. There were so many ideas in the book. Once I got through the initial part of the book where we talked about the theoretical aspects of all this, it became really practical. And I have to thank you for that in this book.
Well, thank you. And of course, I'm delighted to hear that it enlivened you, because writing it enlivened me. I sometimes think, people like me write books because we're wrestling with our own problems. And if we go deep enough into our own problems, they turn out to be problems that other people have as well, because we're connected in that kind of aquifer, that deep aquifer of human life. So I think I emerged from writing the book as a better citizen. And part of it was finding ways to not be overwhelmed by the way the mass media, for example, portray political life, which is always on a scale so huge and at such distance or such remove that ordinary people like you and me feel that we can have no no leverage on the process or its outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And we can explore this more later, but I mean, I'll just say quickly, if you wanted to, if you were a conspiracy theorist, and were trying to think about, now, why is our democracy in such trouble? Why does it seem to why do the wheels seem to be coming off? One of the theories you might come up with is that the mass media do everything they can to disempower us by presenting problems on such a massive scale and at such great remove. But I think that those are cartoons of politics, what we get from the mass media, caricatures, not the real news. And we can talk more later about where we get the real news, because I think that's an important question.
Great. I love this. It's time for us to take a short break. If you've got any questions for our guests, please email us at bfjradio@gmail.com. When we come back, we'll continue speaking with Parker Palmer. Please stay with us.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
There are a number of health and social services available to individuals for low cost or no cost. Now there's a radio program devoted to bringing you the information you need. Tune in to Outreach Today with host Melissa Jenkins-Simon. Our program promotes the benefits and services of CI Incorporated, providing health and social services over a wide spectrum of resources and agencies. We want to help you. Tune in to Outreach Today, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
We're back, and we're talking to Parker Palmer about his book, Healing the Heart of Democracy, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. Parker, let's talk a little bit about the role of emotions in politics and perhaps your working definition of heart as used in the book.
Yeah, well, I'm using the word heart in its ancient and original sense. The word comes from the Latin cor, C-O-R, and so it points to the core of the human self. We've sort of reduced the word heart today to simply the seat of the emotions, a word about feeling, and often a kind of sentimental or even sappy word and used in context. But heart is this powerful place within us, rightly understood, where all of our capacities for knowing, doing, and being come together. Intellect, emotions, will, intuition, vision, etc., etc. It, as we say in Wisconsin, I live in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the whole kielbasa. and I think it's very important to understand that when we appeal to the heart in that sense, we're appealing for the whole human self to show up, which of course is right at the heart of a lot of spiritual traditions, and I think right at the heart of a good life. I was inspired in the writing of this book at a time of real darkness in my own life, 2004, 2005, political and personal darkness. Part of my inspiration came from a quote from the wonderful writer and activist Terry Tempest Williams. Let me just read that quickly. It's the epigraph to the book. "The human heart is the first home of democracy. It is where we embrace our questions. Can we be equitable? Can we be generous? Can we listen with our whole beings, not just our minds, and offer our attention rather than our opinions? And do we have enough resolve in our hearts to act courageously, relentlessly, without giving up, ever, trusting our fellow citizens to join with us in our determined pursuit of a living democracy?" Now, I think that's a powerful quote, and it's very clear that Terry Tempest Williams means much more than the emotions there, because all of these questions that we hold and that we embrace in the sense of wrestle with in our hearts are too complex to leave out the intellect and the will and relational knowing and all the rest, and to leave them simply to the emotions. And it's important to note that Terry Tempest Williams and I do not say that we always come up in our hearts with the right answers to those questions. And the human heart has been the source of murder and genocide and war and racism, on, as well as generosity and community and, in this book, democracy. So it's a complicated force field, and one of the things that I do in the book is to talk about, borrowing from Alexis de Tocqueville, whom we can talk more about later, I talk about the habits of the heart, de Tocqueville's phrase, that we need to learn and relearn in all of the local venues of life. You know, being a citizen is not simply about knowing the names of presidents and the dates of historic events and the opening lines of a few documents, which is how we tend to teach civics. It's really about how we stand in the world in relation to one another and in relation to our problems and in relation to the common good. So heart is a complex thing. I think what happens when we reduce heart to emotions is that we then get a politics of manipulation. You know, it should be clear to anyone who reads the political news, and I'm going to put that in quotes with any care, that there are too many politicians who figure out what the emotional hot buttons are and then win elections by pushing those hot buttons, knowing that they can stir up voters by manipulating feelings, about patriotism or feelings about religion or feelings about whose fault this whole thing is. Those are all ways of reducing the heart to the emotions which can be manipulated. But if we understand, if we educate the whole heart, this complex core of ourselves where all of our ways of knowing and being and doing are found, then we can get a much richer form of human engagement, and we can resist all these distortions that turn politics into a sordid game rather than a noble community-building activity, which is what it's meant to be.
Well, this is very interesting. I think about the word wholeheartedness, and it really completely expands the idea of what it means to come at something wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about my own experiences with getting at the heart of things, a phrase that we all use. And it brings up for me a kind of ability to become vulnerable. And I'm thinking a bit about the Center for Courage and Renewal's work that helps people feel safe enough to get at the deepest piece of something going on inside of them. Because I think in order for us to be, a healthy, emotionally healthy, heart healthy, we the people, we have to know, I think we have to know ourselves, and we have to know when we're being manipulated as well. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the Center for Courage and Renewal's work that helps people feel safe enough to feel their vulnerability.
Well, thank you. That's a nice opportunity. So just to give your listeners an opportunity to learn more, the website of the Center for Courage and Renewal is www.couragerenewal.org. And pretty quickly they can find their links to the work that we're doing on healing the heart of democracy. What we've done in the Center for Courage and Renewal over the last 15 years or so is to train facilitators. We now have about 200 of them around the country who are skilled at gathering, let's say, a group of 25 K-12 teachers or 25 physicians or 25 congregational leaders, the clergy and lay leaders, or 25 nonprofit leaders, in a series of retreats over a year and a half or 2 years, each retreat 3 days each, where the goal, and I'm going to put this in just in elevator speech form, as they say, the very short version, the goal is to help these people who are doing so much of the heavy lifting in our society rejoin soul and role, or to put it different in a different language, because our language is not sectarian in any way, to help these people bring their identity and integrity more fully into their professional and public lives, to say nothing of their personal lives. Well, to do that, we have to create what we call safe space for the soul, safe space for identity and integrity to show up. And, anybody who's been around the block more than once knows how difficult it is in this society to find safe space for the soul. People at work, people in school, even people in religious congregations have a very difficult time simply talking within the context of that community about what's really on their minds and hearts, especially what's on the shadow side, what's on the struggling side, what's on the side of failure and despair. And yet those are the very things we have to explore with one another in order to create safe, in order to help people show up with the fullness of who they are, which is really the only gift we have to give in our work roles and in our citizenship, to say nothing of in our private lives. So, as you know, in the book, I have a chapter called Safe Space for Deep Democracy, and I explore a variety of safe spaces that some of which we have, and we need lots more of them, for people to deal with what I have called the politics of the brokenhearted, which is really tough stuff. So what I say in the book, as you know, Mariana, is that we have this phrase these days that what we're looking at around us is the politics of rage. Well, rage itself is a movement of the heart, and I don't deny that rage is in our midst. But I believe that phrase is a very shallow description of what's going on. I think a lot of us on the left and on the right are brokenhearted about the state of our nation and the world, about the endless conflicts and unnecessary suffering, physical, economic, spiritual suffering. And this brokenheartedness that emerges can go in one of two directions. The heart can break can break apart. It can shatter into a thousand shards and sometimes explode like a fragment grenade, wanting to wound the whoever one thinks is the source of one's brokenheartedness. But there's another way that the educated heart, the illumined heart, the informed heart can break, and that is not to break apart, but to break open into greater capacity to hold one's own suffering and the world's suffering in a more generous and generative way. I know that one of the big themes in your life and work, and one of the things you explore on this program, is how in our private lives we can suffer devastating losses, the death of someone we dearly love, and for a while be in deep darkness about that. We all need to go to that place of grieving. But I've talked with so many people, and I know you have too, and I know this is part of your experience and my experience, who will come through a passage like that and find themselves surprised by the fact that they are not trapped in bitterness and resentment, but instead somehow this experience of loss has made their hearts larger, has made them more compassionate, has made them people who can listen more deeply to other people's pain and not try to fix it, but rather to be there as witness and to be there as companion on the journey. And we need a lot more of that in our pre-political lives. We could come together more profoundly if we had more spaces in which that kind of thing can happen to people. And it's not just the work of the Center for Courage and Renewal, which will always be a small piece of the action, although we have worked with 45,000 people over the last 10 or 12 years. This can happen in classrooms, K through 12 classrooms, university classrooms. This can happen in religious congregations. This can happen in voluntary associations of many sorts. This can happen in public spaces where we mix with the company of strangers and can indeed have meaningful interactions. So this notion of creating safe space, which is at the work of which is at the heart of the work of the Center for Courage and Renewal, is something I think we can extend into the world of politics, and there are some good examples of that actually happening among real people in real space and time.
Thank you so much. You know, everyone who's been interviewed on this show so far, you know, it's a new show, but has had a really heartbreaking experience in which at some point had it break their heart open. And often at Bread for the Journey, we meet these people because they're doing things in the community that make the community healthy. And that's the message of really, that's the message of this show and what I'd like to highlight. And thank you
exactly.
for pointing to that. So, it's time for us to take a short break. If you've got as our listeners, questions for our guests, please email us at bfjradio@gmail.com. We'll come back in a few minutes and continue speaking with Parker. Please stay with us.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
Think of the world
50 years ago.
Now think of this same world and how it'll be
50 years from now.
Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Who or what fills you up? How do you talk to yourself about yourself? Do you feel like your life isn't where you want it to be, that you are underappreciated, or that your relationships leave you wanting? Tune in every week as Dr. Debbie gives you something to think about, a reality check that will allow you to take charge of what goes on in your life. Your life is happening now. Don't waste another minute. Tune in Mondays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel and listen to It's About You with Dr. Debbie.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
We're back, and we're talking to Parker Palmer about his book, Healing the Heart of Democracy, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. Years ago, when I received the essay that you had written that you referred to earlier called The Politics of the Brokenheartedness, it was funded by the Fetzer Institute, I read it from cover to cover, and I was so moved by it that I called Fetzer and asked to get 30 copies of it. And I wrote a letter and sent 30 copies of it out to 30 friends. And I remember the John Woolman story that was such a great example of holding tension, which is one of the five habits of the heart that you talk mm-hmm. about in your book. Can you talk a little bit about this, Parker?
About the five habits?
The five habits and perhaps even the parts of the John Woolman story.
Yeah, maybe start with the John Woolman story. It's a longish story, but I'll try to tell it quickly. So this fellow named John Woolman was born probably 110 years before the Civil War. Dates don't come to mind quickly, but he was an 18th century American Quaker living in what is now New Jersey. And he, as a Quaker, had it, as he said, laid upon his heart that Quakers should free their slaves, because Quakers were like all the white landed gentry in this country at the time. They depended on slave labor for their financial well-being. This was a blatant contradiction, to say the least, enslaving people over against the Quaker belief that there is that of God in every person and that every human being is precious. And John Woolman was one who was not going to blink that contradiction. He was not going to pretend it didn't exist. So he went to his local Quaker meeting, the local congregation, and he made his testimony, and he kept making it, and he kept making it, insisting that it would be the right thing for Quakers to free their slaves. Well, the members of his local meeting, many of them landed gentry, couldn't reach consensus on this, but because Quakers don't make decisions by majority rule, they make them by consensus, the meeting could not lay this thing down. Nor could they deny the absolute integrity of John Woolman, who really walked his talk. He always wore undyed clothing, because dye was a product of slave labor, and on it went in his life. Real consistency. And so the meeting said, while we can't agree with you at the moment, we have no consensus, we will support your family while you travel up and down the East Coast talking with all the Quakers you can find about this witness and this revelation of yours, this prophetic voice, which he did for a period of 20 years. And at the end of that period of time, Quakers became the first religious community in the United States to free their slaves altogether. And they did so 80 years before the Civil War. And in 1783, Quakers petitioned the U.S. Congress for an end to slavery, for legislation which would bring to an end this grievous moral injustice. Congress, as it so often does, tabled the motion and never got back to it. But the point is that Woolman had this, what I think of as a key habit of the heart in American democracy, which is the capacity to hold tension creatively. And when you drill down into the details of Woolman's story, you realize that here was a man who despite the fierce clarity of his vision of justice, he never called anybody names. He never denied another person his or her humanity, even though he disagreed with them. He was consistent in holding a creative tension over a long period of time in a way that helped move our democracy forward. And that, to me, is a key story in the book about what it takes to be a citizen of a democracy. So I name five habits of the heart, and as you'll see in a moment, the one I just mentioned, creative tension holding, is the third one. It's right in the middle of that list. Let me just name them quickly. An understanding that we are all in this together, that's number one. An appreciation of the value of otherness, of the stranger, that's number two. An ability to hold tension in life-giving ways, that's number three. A sense of personal voice and agency, or capacity to make a difference, that's number four. And finally, a capacity to create community, because it takes a village to do almost everything, and especially in this political realm. In the book, I go into a lot of detail about what each of those habits means. I go into detail about how we might cultivate them in some of the places that I named earlier, these local venues of life like families and neighborhoods and classrooms and congregations and workplaces, because these have to be developed. I think they're part of the human heart, but they don't necessarily get rise to prominence unless we evoke them and educate people in them, which is part of the pre-political task in this society. So I'll just say one more thing about this, Mariana, before we move on. Right at the heart of the genius of the founders, and the founders of this country were flawed in many ways, including their very narrow definition of who the we was in We the People, a definition that now, thankfully, has expanded greatly beyond what they could have imagined. But their genius was to give us a tension-holding form of government. So the three branches, for example, of executive, legislative, and judicial, when they function as intended, serve as what I call a tension-holding loom on which we can keep weaving and reweaving the fabric of a good society. And there's a lot of historical evidence that these three branches of government, by holding these tensions, have allowed us to make progress, not as rapid as we would have wished, some of us would have wished, and certainly not around some of the most profound moral issues we still face, but progress nonetheless. The point in the book that I try to make with some vigor is that these brilliantly conceived tension-holding institutions of government cannot function as intended if they are not inhabited by people, citizens and leaders alike, who know how to hold tension inwardly, who know how to let the heart break open rather than apart. And clearly today, in some of our capitals, national and state, we have too many people who aren't engaged in creative tension holding. I think there's a lot more capacity for that among the citizens of this country, and there's empirical evidence of that fact. But as long as we have a public realm that is not, that people don't feel is safe, where they can show up as we the people and debate issues in a hospitable rather than hostile way, and learn in their bones that we are all in this together. As long as that's the case, we aren't going to be able to make a claim on Washington, D.C. We all know that the power of big money in Washington and our state capitals has trumped the power of we the people. But Bill Moyers, in typical fashion, has said a very wise thing. He said, the only answer to the power of organized money is the power of organized people. And I think he's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what do we need to do to shape local communities and shape habits of the heart in our local venues of life that will allow us to become organized people around things we care about?
This ability to hold tension, it's an issue of it's a personal growth issue. It's an issue of maturity. And often I find that people, well, I worked in the field of grief before my work with Bread for the Journey, and you know, grief takes a long time, and you know, holding people through that period required of us the ability to hold tension in a life-giving way, and it required it of the person who was grieving as well, because often they thought, you know, that they would never survive this. Mm-hmm. And then they arrive at the other end, and they realize they have. Mm-hmm. And when we have that as a personal experience, we can then begin to actually calm ourselves down during difficult periods and hold tension in a life-giving way.
Mm-hmm. It takes time, and it takes maturity, and it takes help and support. And it's something that people are doing day in and day out in their private lives. As I say in the book, anybody who's ever raised a teenager knows something about creative tension holding.
Right.
Because as a parent, you see the promise in this young person. You know something of their true self. But you also see them experimenting with different modes of being, making some bad decisions, sometimes going off the rail. And a good parent knows that the last thing in the world you want to do at that point is to try to force the outcome. You want instead to hold a creative tension between what can be and what is in that child's life. And one of the appeals I make in the book is, let's take some of these habits of the heart that we have in private life and realize how important and useful they are in the public realm, and realize that we already know how to do some of them.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. It is time for us to take a short break. If you've got any questions for Parker, please email us at bfjradio@gmail.com. We'll come back in a few minutes. Please stay with us.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You were born a visionary. How do you get closer to your personal vision? Tune in to Visionary Radio with Giselle. Our program is all about evidence-based positive change. Giselle and her guests will bring you stories of positive visions achieved, hope and renewal, designed to inspire you in ways that matter in your life, in ways that last and bring you closer to who and where you want to be. This program is for and about real people, and we want you to be a part of it too. Tune in to Visionary Radio with Giselle every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain inspired really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
We're back, and we're talking to Parker Palmer about his book, Healing the Heart of Democracy, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. Parker, we've got a few questions that have come in our email, and I'd like to go over them with you. The first one is, what are the sources of real news? Good question.
Well, I'll say a couple of things about that. First of all, we need to be very discerning about the national large-scale sources that we read, and we need to make sure that they're not being written from or spoken from a purely ideological standpoint. Everybody has to make their own call on that. I'm not going to try to recommend reading. And because we all also find a certain seduction in reading the ideologically tilted stuff, we need to read on both sides of the fence to see how that argument might balance out in our own mind. So that's about discernment. The real news is also the news we get from our own lives. One of our problems is that too many people don't trust their own knowledge. If I go into a community and I ask them, how are you feeling about politics these days? The answers are all negative because they reflect these cartoons and caricatures that too much of the mass media give us. But if I then ask them, what's going on in your local community that interests you or engages you? People start reporting all kinds of positive, constructive things that are happening that are in fact political, but they don't realize that they are. So another source of real news is what we know from our local situation. It's always a mixed bag, but there's often more good news there than bad. And then a third source, which I write about in the book, is getting the news from within. And I tell some stories in the book about what that means. We don't have time to go into that in detail, but inside of us, as the Terry Tempest Williams quote suggests, there's a lot of political discussion going on, and the heart is wrestling with these questions. Let's pay attention to what questions are coming up within us, how we're responding to them, how we're holding them, and very often we'll find within ourselves a yearning for something better that is really good news.
Thank you. The second question that came in is, it sounds like what you're talking about, heart and politics, requires a lot of maturity. Do you think we're there as a country?
Well, I understand the question, and at the same time, I find it impossible to generalize about where we are as a country. A country like an individual, I'll take myself as an example, is a mixed bag. You know, we're there in some ways and we're not there or far away from it in others. But I do think that there's more going on among we the people that is promising than we often credit ourselves for. Let me give you an example. In very respected and recent public opinion polls, such as those of the Pew Research Center, a majority, sometimes a large majority of Americans favor such things as protecting the environment, reducing our overseas military commitments, improving veterans' benefits and services, maintaining or strengthening restrictive gun control laws, providing a way for undocumented immigrants to gain legal citizenship, legalizing civil unions for gay couples, etc. Now, I realize that every one of those is debatable, but the point is that in our ongoing debate, a majority and sometimes a large majority of Americans come down on those issues in a way that's not being reflected in Washington, D.C. or in our state capitals. So there's this gap between a more mature people on balance and a national political process that seems to teeter on the edge of madness. I have great hope for we, the people, just as the founders did. Because when you get beneath the cartoons and beneath the caricatures and you find out what people are really thinking, of course you find some folks that you wouldn't want to walk with, but you find a lot, a great number with whom you'd like to be hand in hand. As I say in the book, I'm prepared to grant that 15 to 20% of the people on the far left and 15 to 20% of the people on the far right will not be available for the kind of conversation I have in mind. But that leaves 60 to 70% in the middle, and in a democracy, that's more than enough to do business and do it well.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Thank you so much, Parker. This has been a fabulous show, and I have 100 more questions here on my paper. Actually, 10 more questions that we didn't get to. And maybe we can do this again sometime.
Thank you, Mariana.
You're welcome.
I hope we can. I've loved being with you.
That's great. So to our listeners, please join us next Saturday when we'll be talking about a secret in plain sight, a very effective tool for building community in a way that goes deep and grows roots. I'll give you a sneak preview. It's fun. Our guests will be Kathy Capers, a dialogue facilitator and founder of our Bread for the Journey chapter in Austin, Texas, and John Saruf, a mediator and community building facilitator. Please join us. I promise you won't be sorry. And finally, if you'd like to support the work of Bread for the Journey, we hope you'll go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If everyone pitches in a little bit, we can change the world. Thank you. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.